So picture this. You have a dependency, and it just published a security advisory on a Tuesday morning.
Right, the classic Tuesday nightmare.
Exactly. And it is a severe vulnerability, but the fix actually requires a full framework migration, or perhaps a new database engine drops onto the market. It operates at half the cost, offers triple the read speed, but your code base is just completely welded to the current one.
Because the ORM is completely entangled with your business logic.
Yeah, pulling it apart would take a year. And I mean, these are normal everyday problems for an engineering leader.
They are. And the standard industry response to those Tuesday problems is, well, it's entirely defensive. Engineering teams treat their code base as an asset,
They guard it.
right? They guard it, they patch it carefully, they set up these massive continuous integration pipelines just to make sure they do not break it. And, they plan a 6-month migration strategy to swap out that database. The underlying assumption is always that the code itself holds the value of the company.
But today, we are looking at a radical framework that suggests you should actually stop guarding that code base entirely.
Yes.
In fact, the argument we are examining today flips that standard model on its head. The claim is that the code base is not an asset you guard. It is a commodity you regenerate.
A completely disposable commodity.
Exactly. And the true asset, the thing you actually own and protect, is the blueprint. And this blueprint is an executable specification written entirely as operator-facing tests.
Which represents a massive structural shift in how we approach long-term survival in software engineering. When you guard a huge handwritten code base, you are essentially accepting vendor lock-in.
You're just accepting a compounding maintenance burden.
Spot on. Now, Jonathan Leahy's recent publication, The Rented Codebase, presents a formal argument and actual empirical evidence that regenerating a code base on demand works in production.
And we are skipping the artificial intelligence hype today. We are looking directly at the mechanics of how this functions for you, assuming you're an experienced engineer or technical leader who is frankly tired of managing legacy systems.
So, to evaluate this claim that a code base is just a commodity, we really have to look at the extreme end of the spectrum first.
Right. We need to look at what happens when you push AI authoring to its absolute limit, but without having this test suite blueprint in place.
And Leahy ran an initial experiment to prove exactly this point. He built what he calls a dark factory.
Which, in manufacturing terms, is a facility that runs completely lights out.
Yeah, no people on the floor at all. Leahy built a software equivalent using a system of AI agents. He fed this factory a single paragraph product brief.
Just one paragraph.
Just one. And the agents then churned through the requirements, authored the code, executed their own tests, provisioned the infrastructure, and shipped a working software as a service product to the public internet.
So he used this dark factory to ship 12 distinct micro SaaS products in a single month.
Which is astonishing output.
On paper, sure. To a non-technical executive, that sounds like the ultimate productivity breakthrough. But looking at the pile of software sitting on the servers, the author realized he had generated a massive, unmanageable liability.
Because in 1 month, he had produced more lines of code than he had written by hand in his entire career.
And those 12 products were subtly different code bases. They had different folder structures, conflicting architectural patterns, and entirely different conventions for handling data.
Which is the perfect description of phase one AI adoption across the industry right now, honestly. Companies observe that AI can write code rapidly, so they spend that new throughput on generating 10 times more code.
But the problem is that code is not free.
No, it's not. Every line is an attack surface. Every single line is a maintenance liability that an engineer eventually has to read and understand.
I have to stop you there, though, because the immediate counterargument from any CFO listening is going to be
Let the AI fix it.
exactly. If the AI wrote it, let the AI fix it. I mean, if an AI model is clever enough to write 12 code bases in a month from a one-paragraph brief, why do I need a human engineer to maintain it at all?
Why can't the AI just debug its own mess when something breaks?
Right. And that is the exact logic that drove the 80,000 tech job cuts in the first quarter of 2026.
It is, but it completely ignores the mechanical reality of how these models operate. AI models are probabilistic. When you feed a massive, undocumented AI-generated code base back into a model to fix a bug, it does not understand the architecture in a human sense.
It just guesses a patch.
Yes, it applies a mathematical band-aid over a logical problem.
So it satisfies the immediate error, but it warps the underlying structure.
Precisely. Each of those band-aids introduces subtle architectural drift. If you run that cycle 3 or 4 times, the code base just devolves into structural spaghetti.
The incident resolution time doesn't just spike, the system becomes mathematically unrescuable.
You end up with a system that works on the surface, but is entirely brittle underneath.
Which brings us to Kernighan's law. Brian Kernighan pointed out decades ago that debugging is twice as hard as writing a program. So if you write code at the absolute limit of your cleverness, you are, by definition, not smart enough to debug it.
Now apply that maths to a large language model. An AI writes code at the absolute ceiling of its cleverness every single time.
It uses highly abstracted patterns, convoluted rejects, or complex bitwise operations.
Stuff that technically compiles and runs, but leaves zero cognitive headroom for a human being to parse later. The intelligence required to maintain that specific implementation exceeds the model that wrote it.
And it certainly exceeds the on-call engineer who has to fix it at 3 a.m. Human developers simply cannot maintain a massive volume of AI-generated code.
Right, and because we cannot maintain the code, the only logical conclusion is to stop maintaining the code entirely.
We have to start maintaining the instructions.
Exactly. This is the core shift from a builder culture to an architect culture, and it revolves entirely around testing.
So let's break that down. In traditional builder culture, tests act as scaffolding wrapped around a specific implementation.
You write tests that check exactly how a specific function works. You use mocked databases or fake services heavily to isolate internal mechanisms.
Your test names look like test user store create persists row.
Yes, you are testing the internal machinery.
But if I swap out the database or if I rewrite that function in a different programming language, those tests break instantly.
The tests fail, even if the software still does exactly what the user wants it to do.
Right, because the implementation is treated as the deliverable, and the tests are just temporary support structures to make sure the builders don't drop a brick on their own feet.
But in architect culture, the tests are the deliverable. They describe what the product does in purely operator-facing terms.
So instead of testing if a specific internal function returns a string within 200 milliseconds, an architect culture test asserts that an authenticated visitor looking at the dashboard sees real data within 10 seconds.
It tests the contract with the user. It is entirely implementation agnostic.
So if your test suite purely defines the operator-facing contract, then any implementation that passes that suite is provably correct.
That's the theory, yes.
I want to introduce an analogy to physical manufacturing here because I think it helps clarify this. Think of the AI generation factory as a massive industrial printing press.
Okay, I'm with you.
The test suite, that architect culture specification, is the die, the physical metal mold. And the code base itself is just a single print run.
That is the exact relationship.
So if a better raw material becomes available tomorrow, say a brand new web framework, a cheaper cloud provider, or a strictly better AI reasoning model, you do not go back and meticulously try to alter the old print run with a scalpel.
No, you do not write a migration script to update millions of printed pages.
You simply load the new material into the press, stamp out a completely new print run using the original unchanged die, and chuck the old print run in the bin.
That is the absolute essence of the rendered code base. You point your factory at the unchanged blueprint, and you get a fresh build. You are merely renting the code until a better implementation comes along. You own the die.
The theory sounds perfectly clean, but reality is messy. I mean, a one-paragraph brief or even a solid set of initial tests is going to miss edge cases.
Of course. Users do unpredictable things constantly.
They paste entire novels into text fields meant for usernames. They double-click payment submission buttons. If the test suite is the only thing we keep, how does this method handle the messy reality of actual user behavior?
Well, the answer lies in how an architect culture handles bugs. In the traditional framework, a bug is viewed as a code defect. An engineer opens the code base, finds the broken logic, changes a variable, and pushes a patch.
Right, that's standard procedure.
But in the regeneration framework, a bug is not a code defect. A bug is a previously unstated clause that the operator implicitly expected but failed to write into the blueprint.
So, if a user clicks a submit button twice and the database creates two identical billing records, the problem isn't just that the code failed to debounce the button.
Wow.
The problem is that the blueprint never explicitly stated. When a user clicks submit twice, only one record should be created.
Therefore, the job of a bug fix is no longer to patch the code. The job is to make that unstated clause permanent.
The developer writes that unstated clause as an executable test and appends it to the specification.
Exactly. You fix the metal die, you do not touch the print run.
You grow the blueprint.
This mechanism is called accretion. After 100 bug fix cycles, the specification is no longer just a brief outline. It has accreted into the operator's complete executable intent.
It covers the happy paths, the edge cases, the weird user behaviors, and the security constraints.
And because every future regeneration of the code base runs against this accreted specification, regressions are structurally eliminated.
The factory literally cannot ship a new version of the code base that fails the double-click test you added during that bug fix 6 months ago.
This is where the value of regeneration truly compounds.
Yeah.
Every time you regenerate the code base, it is being authored by a strictly better AI model against the exact same unchanged specification.
Right. So if we look 5 years into the future, imagine two engineering teams.
Right.
Team A spends 5 years guarding a handwritten code base. They patch it, they update dependencies, they carefully navigate technical debt. They essentially age with their code.
That's a familiar story.
Now, Team B adopts the architect culture. They spend 5 years accreting a massive, impenetrable test suite. Every year, Team B regenerates their entire software product from scratch using the newest AI model.
Which means Team B inherits every single industry improvement in reasoning, coding judgment, and architectural efficiency for the cost of one compute run.
While Team A is stuck managing legacy code,
the gap between those two teams widens exponentially. Team A will eventually spend 80% of their engineering cycles just keeping the lights on, while Team B spends nearly all their cycles accreting new product capabilities into their blueprint.
I am going to challenge the mechanics of this, though, because anyone who has built complex systems knows there is a trap here. Let's talk about the second feature problem.
Go on.
The first time an AI ships a feature, it is incredibly fast because it is a greenfield project. There are no constraints.
None at all.
But let us say I have my accreted blueprint and I want to add a completely new billing module. I write the tests for the billing module and add them to the specification. I point the factory at the expanded blueprint.
Right.
If the AI regenerates a completely new code base that satisfies all the old tests and the new billing tests, it might achieve that by completely shifting the internal boundaries of the software.
It will satisfy the operator-facing tests, but the internal architecture, the database schemas, the internal API boundaries, the file structures might look entirely different.
Exactly. My external contracts hold up, but my internal contracts experience massive drift.
And that's the danger.
If the shape of the code base shifts on every single regeneration run just to get all the tests to pass, how do you plug in third-party monitoring tools? How do you maintain database persistence if the AI redraws the schema tables every Tuesday?
You can't.
How do you prevent internal collapse when the AI is constantly reorganizing the internals?
That drift is the exact reason most companies will fail at this transition. The theory of continuous regeneration is mathematically sound, but actually building the standardization gates to prevent that internal drift is where engineering teams will succeed or fail.
Because if you let the model hallucinate the architecture on every pass, you don't have a product. You have chaos.
You have the 12 microsas products from the dark factory experiment all over again.
Right.
Yes, you must constrain the AI. You have to force it to use specific internal boundaries and predictable schemas so that the generated code fits into your actual operational environment.
And this is precisely where we hit the boundary of our discussion today. The author of the rented code base proves this is possible in production.
He does. The book details the specific standardization work required to pull the shape of every product into the blueprint.
Leahy outlines exactly how to build those standardization gates. He provides the empirical evidence that you can constrain an AI factory so it does not invent wild internal architectures on every single pass while still allowing it to regenerate the code base to pass the accreted tests.
He includes a complete worked example in the text, actually. A queuing software as a service called JiQueue.
That was the seventh product he built, right?
Yes. And the very first one built end-to-end against a standardized blueprint that successfully prevented internal drift.
The book carries the empirical evidence, and it contains the exact method for building these gates. We are not going to outline the full method here because the granular mechanics of standardizing AI output require deep technical study.
It's heavily detailed.
If you are an engineering leader looking to structurally eliminate legacy code, that is the reason to read the text. The strength of the claim really stands on its own.
To distill the argument to its core, engineering teams over the next 5 years will reorganize around growing and protecting the blueprint rather than guarding the code base. The code is rented. the test suite is owned.
This is a strategic engineering capability. It is a way to structurally eliminate vendor lock-in.
Absolutely. If your product is fully defined by operator-facing tests, moving from AWS to Google Cloud, or moving from Node to Rust, is no longer a multi-year migration.
It is simply a matter of updating the raw materials in your factory and stamping out a new print run.
It shifts your entire engineering posture from defensive patching to aggressive regeneration.
But I want to leave you with a final analytical question. We have spent this time discussing the dangers of holding on to a massive code base, the inherent lock-in of guarding legacy systems, and the freedom of generating commodity code. But what about the tools building that new code?
The factory itself.
Exactly. If your entire engineering output, your entire ability to generate and regenerate your product, relies on a single proprietary AI vendor's token meter.
And that vendor decides to flip to aggressive consumption billing.
Right. Who actually owns your product margins then? If you can swap your database in an afternoon, but you cannot swap the AI reasoning model generating your code without breaking your entire pipeline, have you actually escaped lock-in?
Or have you just traded one master for another?
It is a structural vulnerability that every technical leader needs to answer before they commit their architecture to a single runtime or a single intelligence provider.
More Tuesday morning problems.
Always. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.